All right, a couple of things here real quick. Actually, just one thing real quick, because James Hamm was enough to join us early here, and we want to talk Kings basketball and see how much James has been able to catch up on after a week in Cabo. But I told you there was a big story that emerged over the weekend that really came from nothing, is nothing. But because it's LeBron James, it became a story. LeBron James declined to join the ESPN Summer League broadcast told Dave McMiniman, "I ain't got nothing to talk about." And that became a massive story over at ESPN. LeBron James not joining their broadcast was a big, big deal.
All right, I'm going to play a clip. Just let me know if it's something or it's nothing.
Yep, watching. All right, there's LeBron. Nice Louis Vuitton outfit right there.
Him. They're handing him a Lakers wristband, by the way.
Yep.
Look, it's a Lakers wristband. Well, what am I going to do with that? Oh, just passes off the wristband. Put it on, LeBron.
No.
Put on the wristband, LeBron.
Oh, no. That's nothing.
Why is he not putting on the Lakers wristband?
Stop
it. Why is he not putting on the wristband, D-Lo?
Settle down, Stephen A. Tapia. Wow.
Pass it off kind of quickly. Look like he didn't care about it.
No, he's not putting that bracelet on. He gave it to his daughter.
I don't know. People are asking.
Wow. Why do you hate kids?
I don't. I hate non-loyalty to teams.
Wow. Well, it sounds like the Lakers were the ones who weren't loyal. The LeBron James thing is a bit funny to follow because LeBron is being treated like every other player in the history of the league has, except for LeBron James. Or I guess maybe like there's LeBron, Kobe, Dirk. There's a handful of guys that have never had to go through anything like this. And LeBron, for his entire career, has dictated everything. And it appears, trying to read between the lines of some of this stuff, the impetus of all of this is the fact that the Lakers didn't offer LeBron James a contract extension, and that has kind of led us to where we are right now.
Well, I mean, how long is he going to play? I mean, I don't think no one has any idea. Like,
no one has ever played 23 seasons before, and LeBron James is entering his 23rd season.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a weird situation that it's kind of uncharted waters where a player is not only continuously playing at this age, but at such a high level and who means so much to a franchise. You know, I remember the first time he left Cleveland, they said the franchise valuation dropped by $100 million. And at this point, that sounds like, oh, well, that's not that much money. And it was. It was when the franchise was worth like $500 million, it dropped by $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, around that same time, the Kings sold for $535 million. So like that, he just means so much to a franchise. The same thing with players like Luka. It just is a tremendous investment that you put into a player. And when they hit it big, they become like so incredibly valuable to everything that you do. And so I'm intrigued to see what he does, how long he wants to play, or if he just, you know, hangs it up. Like there's nothing that says he has to play beyond this season.
Yeah. But this isn't the Lakers beat, man. This is the Kings beat. And I've been anxious to talk to James here for a little bit about some things that are going on around the Sacramento Kings. Let's start with the most recent. This could just be my bad, Hammer, but did you realize that the Jonas Valanciunas, Dario Saric trade wasn't actually completed until yesterday?
Yeah, there was a hang-up with the Denver Nuggets because, you know, when you do all of these contractual deals right during the moratorium, they have to be put in order. Like, in order for you to – first, you have to use all your cap space. Then once you use your cap space, you have to use specific exemptions at specific times, and then you can sign your own free agents. And sometimes there's a holdup in all of this because one of those actions can't be done before the others. And so I think this was just basically a housekeeping thing. I'm surprised though, like I don't know if Valanciunas is willing to give back his entire salary or not. Because if he was willing to give back his entire salary and I was the Sacramento Kings, I would have reeled in that trade and said, you know what? It's fine. If he wants to go to Europe, I know you guys don't want him to go to Europe and play, but we do. That's fine. We'll take the $10 million, basically cash gift. It would have alleviated, you know, an extra $5 million over what they're doing right now. But then eventually the deal got done, you know, yesterday. That's when the league office, they called it into the league office. And you know, the Kings saved around $5 million in the deal. And I know people can say, oh, they're just being cheap or something like that, but that's really not what it is. They're trying to open up more cap space between where they are, you know, financially today and where the luxury tax is. And so every little bit of money that you can reduce your salary helps you get below that luxury tax. So if you're a team who's not going to go into the luxury tax, and like rightfully so, the Kings aren't good enough to go into the luxury tax, in my opinion. But if that's who you are, like, we shouldn't be holding them, you know, to some weird standard that they have to go into the luxury tax just because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your team is good enough, yeah, go into the tax. But right now they're in some weird flux mode where, you know, we're hearing things like 2027 mentioned repeatedly, and that might be the way that it is. And this deal here, it just allowed them to bring in a player who, again, I don't know if Dario Saric will play or not for the Kings. He easily could be bought out. He could be stretch provisioned. They could stretch provision him and open up over $3 million in cap space again. And you might need that, especially if you continue to have conversations and, you know, kick the tires on players like Jonathan Kuminga.
Hammer, can we go back to the 2027 thing? I know that you joined the insiders from you joined your show from Cabo at some point last week and talked about 2027 and what the thought might be amongst this Kings organization in terms of some of these contracts they have.
Yeah, it's just tough. You know, Scott Perry inherited a bit of a financial mess where you've got a couple of players with gigantic salaries. You know, you've got, you know, again, they owe Zach LaVine something like $97 million over the next 2 years. And on top of that, you've got some other players that you want to play, you want to pay, some other players that you might want to move on from. But realistically, Scott has to, first and foremost, like, clean up the room, you know, clean up the books. And that's not easy to do. That's why I think the Dennis Schroeder trade really did help the Kings. You know, they were able to go out and make an actual sign-in trade, which hard capped them at the first apron, which are nowhere near at this point. But also, it allowed them to collect a second-round pick. The Kings don't have a lot of second-round picks. We saw how valuable they were last offseason. They've already tied up two of their second-round picks in the potential, well, in the trade for Nate Clifford. So, you know, if they don't give up the 2027 Spurs pick, then they give up 2 seconds that year. So, again, those picks are gone. So, as of right now, the Kings have their own 2026 second-round pick. They have a second round pick from Charlotte. And then on top of that, they have a 2032 pick, second round pick. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a bunch of seconds. Anyway, so what Scott's been doing is trying to create, you know, sort of opportunities to go get second round picks. And that's what the Schroeder trade ended up being. Not only did you take on a player, but you basically allowed Detroit to create a $14.1 million trade exception, which has value. And Detroit is kind of like the Kings, except for they have a whole bunch more space, but they're living in that gray area between the salary cap, which they're over, and the luxury tax, which they're under, but they're under a whole bunch. Now they have a $14.1 million trade exception to go out and try to find a player to fit into that, which is big. And that trade also allowed the Kings to have this $14.1 million mid-level exception, which they would not have had if it weren't for the fact that they made this trade. So again, a lot of housekeeping that has to be done by Scott. And at the end of the day, he might not be able to clean up everything until 2027. And that's the year that, of course, you know, Zach LaVine's massive deal falls off the books. It's the last year that you owe DeMar DeRozan any money. It puts you, I think, a season away from Domantas Sabonis' final year. Again, Malik Monk would go into that summer with a player option. So you can see that there's light at the end of the tunnel where the Kings could actually be people who are, you know, able to go out and either sign players or make trades to bring in high-end players and supplement whatever they can do in the draft.
So I hear the way that you lay that out, and am just stuck asking, so what does that mean for this year or even next
year? That means, yeah, what it means for this year and next year is that, you know, you have Dennis Schroeder as a stopgap point guard, whether that's for 1 year or for whether it's 2 years, or whether you get some crazy deal at the trade deadline this year that says, hey, we can move on from Dennis Schroeder and bring in sort of the A-list point guard that you're looking for. But what it does is it puts the next 2 years in kind of a holding pattern where the Kings are going to be competitive, but are they going to be really competitive? And I think as of right now, the answer is they'll be a solid team that's going to compete for like an 8-9-10 spot in the Western Conference. Maybe they'll fall below that. Maybe somehow they jump up above that. But you're just trying to get to this moment where your books are as clean as possible. And, you know, it's tough when you're trying to build a winner and you get to a certain point, like the Kings did like 3 years ago, where all of a sudden you go out and you win 49 games and you want to add more money, but also your own players get more expensive and you start shelling out all this cash. And then if it doesn't work out, you're kind of stuck trying to reverse everything that you did. And there's no easy way to reverse things in the NBA in the current landscape, because the new salary cap restrictions really have hamstrung the league. I mean, like, everybody is looking at this as like, either you're just going to pay a ton of money in tax or you're just stuck. You're stuck with the team that you have, and you're hoping that you can come up with deals around the league that make sense to improve your roster, but with the full knowledge that there isn't a way to do that. And, you know, I think the Kings are one of, you know, a handful of teams that, you know, it might be better for a Portland Trailblazers team, as opposed to paying another gigantic contract out like they did with DeAndre Ayton, to just let a Jeremy Grant contract expire. But it's a tough thing to take on, you know, a couple of years of $70 million, $80 million bucks for a player that is past his prime. And so I think the Kings are in a spot that, again, a lot of teams around the league are in. And that's why we haven't seen nearly as much movement as we thought we might this offseason.
Mm-hmm. I coined a term. I called it survive and figure it out. That's what I think this basketball team can do. Like, are they perfect? No. Are they constructed perfectly? No. But they do have talent. And if you can find a way to survive this year and survive next year, and then you wind up, like, if you're, you know, if you're operating as a first round playoff exit team, I feel like that puts you in a better position in 2 years when guys are off the books, or maybe you get into next year and you got guys on expiring contracts, to build a better, more competitive team than if you're, you know, back into the lottery phase of being a Sacramento Kings team.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could be wrong. Like, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to survive as a radio host, a fan, all of that stuff with, hey, this team isn't that bad.
I think that that's like the mantra. Like, we, you know, all in was a mantra 1 year, together, or believe, or whatever. This year's shirt might say, this team isn't that bad. I mean, I don't think they're going to print that shirt, sure, but some fan out there might.
Yeah.
And I'd bring this up too. Zebra PT, you can't build a castle on crumbling foundation. It's like the old, you know, biblical parable about building your house on sand versus building your house on rock. You build your house on sand, it gets washed away. You build your house on rock, and, you know, it's there to stay. And the Kings thought they had built their house on stone, and everything was, you know, they had pillars, mm-hmm, they could potentially support this thing, but then they stopped doing the rest of the work. So it's nice that you build a beautiful house, but if you never finish the plumbing, like, your house is going to smell and no one's going to come visit you. And, you know, if you don't figure out how to build the electrical into the house, then, you know, you don't have any lights and people aren't going to want to come and check out your house. So, you know, what they did here is I think that they started out strong and they've had a foundation, but they lost their way somewhere, you know, midway through this build and really hurt themselves. And it's really, it's the way that teams get bad quickly is there's always a move or two that you could have made that you didn't make. And more often than not, those moves that you didn't make are the ones that really come back to haunt you. And we can look at the Pascal Siakam deal. We can look at OG Anunoby, whatever it might be. But there were moves where this team could have been a title contender, and they didn't do the deal. And maybe that's because the owner didn't want to shell out the cash for another $40 million player, or maybe they just looked at not only that $40 million for a player, but, you know, going deep into the luxury tax and not wanting to do that. Whatever it was, they didn't close the deal on a couple of gigantic transactions that could have put this team in a different stratosphere as far as where they are. And now you're just kind of left with the decaying, you know, body of a team, of a house that's half built on sand. And it's a bummer to watch it get washed away. But, you know, you might be right. You put some sandbags out and hope that your house doesn't flood every single day. And maybe you make it through the winter. Maybe you don't.
That's a tough way to live. But it might be the reality of this basketball team. Is that offseason after the playoff appearance, is that going to be the defining moment for where things went wrong with this team and the build we're talking about?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's that moment. It's the previous trade deadline where they stood pat and they liked their team and they said, we're not going to do anything, but it's like your team still has holes. That offseason, and then it's the next trade deadline where, again, I think that next trade deadline, all they did was acquire Robin Lopez and waive him. The previous trade deadline.
The Robin Lopez era when he was reading a book.
Yeah, the Beam Team era, the first year of the Beam Team, that's the year where they acquired Kessler Edwards in a second round pick to let the Brooklyn Nets get underneath the luxury tax as opposed to doing anything meaningful at the deadline. And sometimes, you know, you got to stay the course, but you also have to be honest with your team at all times. Like if you have a gigantic gaping hole in what your roster is, you have to continuously try to fix that. And you can say, you know, going into this season, the Kings still have the giant gaping hole that they continuously have. They don't have the length and athleticism at the wings that we would like to see from a team that is in modern basketball. You got one guy who's 6'8" that is a meaningful 30 plus minute per game rotational player, and that's Keegan Murray on the wings, and that's tough. So, you know, we're kind of in this holding pattern until they're able to either find those guys via trade or through the draft, or, you know, they figure out a different way to play basketball that makes sense, and it's not easy.
Well, the good news is, Hammer, we are entering a new era, and I believe it is the Maxime Raynaud era. Of course, he won't play tonight, as your partner over on the Kings beat, Sean Cunningham, reported earlier today. He's out with wrist soreness, but it's been a fun two games to watch this young man perform. Like there was a lot of hype after he was selected 42nd in the draft a couple of weeks ago, and man, he's lived up to it. He's been able to hit shots from all over the floor. That debut in the summer league late last week was as electric of a debut as I've ever seen. And he followed it up nicely with a nice balanced performance on Saturday. He's been a hell of a player to watch so far.
Yeah, I totally agree. Basically, what you're getting is just a really, really high basketball IQ, high skill level player. Which I think that's what they thought they were getting, but to see it work out on the court has really been impressive. And, you know, we talk about like the dangers of summer league, of getting too high and too low on players in summer league. I remember, you know, the Kings had traded for Dante Green a couple of a decade ago, maybe more, maybe 15 years ago, you know, but the trade couldn't go through until after summer league or midway through summer league. And so he went out with the Houston Rockets and dropped 40. And everybody was oohing and on at just how good Dante Green could be. Like, I don't know if he ever scored 40 in a game. I don't know if he ever scored, maybe he scored 30 in a game one time. But like, it doesn't always translate. But what you're looking for is Do they look competent? Do they look like they're not so overwhelmed? Do they look like that they're athletic at all? Because sometimes you get players in, you're like, oh man, this dude can't move at all. But what I think we've seen from Reynolds is I want him to rebound better. That's one issue. But outside of that, he's got a little baby jump hook. He's got the three-point shot. The court vision is crazy. We saw the pass to Isaac Jones for the dunk the other day. To me, when you see, it's not just that he made a bounce pass, it's that he made an electric pass, and it showed you something that maybe no one knew that he had in his bag, because that's not who he was at Stanford. So I think Kings fans should be really excited about him. We talked about this on the Insiders a little bit, and I talked about it last week when I jumped on from Cabo, but you know, there's a reason why the Kings traded Jonas Valanciunas. First and foremost, it was to save that $5 million to open up that gap in their salary. But also it was to go out and get a player like Drew Eubanks, who is a career backup and knows his job, but then the potential for Reynolds to actually get minutes in year one and what that could mean. You know, Drew Eubanks is not, again, he's not some player that's going to change the outcome of a bunch of games this year, but he knows his job and he has no problem sitting on the end of the bench and being a pro if you do have a young player develop faster than what you thought. And so I don't, again, still love it, but the Kings will be able to play faster off the bench with a player like Eubanks. And they'll also have the opportunity at some point to maybe hand that.
That is an official James Hamm freeze. James Hamm is officially back from Cabo, as he has frozen here at 3:09. That one kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think anyone had their times in. As a matter of fact, I think the what time does James freeze game has been on hold for a while.
It's been a while.
But Hammer is back, and he's smiling. That's how you know Ham's back from vacation. Normally, he's frustrated as hell, but he's still got that Cabo cool to him, and he's nice and relaxed after the freeze. But Max, do you think Max can make, you said, obviously it's summer league, we don't want to get, you know, too caught up, but I said earlier we can use our imagination and see how it works and see how it works, you know, with the main roster. Do you think he can make an immediate impact on this rotation? Can he give Doug Christie some real decisions to make when the season gets underway?
I don't know if it'll be in October, November, but I do think by the end of November and early December, you might be looking at a little bit more and more and more of Max. So he's got skill. And, you know, I think going through a summer league is amazing, right? And you're starting to see what it is that you really want to focus on over the next 10 weeks with him. How do you get him better? And I think, again, physically, he needs to be more physical, number one. But number two, you're going to get him in the gym. You're going to bulk him up a little bit. You know, 10 weeks with a professional training staff is a long time. And they can get him out on the floor. They can, you know, beat on him a little bit, push him around a little bit, have him go one-on-one against Dylan Gardwell in pickup games and, you know, feel what that's going to be like, because that's not nice either. Mm-hmm. Cardwell has a mean streak in him, and he's going to shove him all over the court, but that's good. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to build up a player. I think there is a chance you need to give, like we talked about earlier, this team might not be that bad, right? Mm-hmm. We do need to see if this team can be good. And so the first couple of, you know, weeks of the season, the first month and a half of the season, you don't know what you have until game 20. We always hear that. Mm-hmm. You do need to let this group show whether they're good enough to stay together and to build something or not. And during that time, it's very possible we see more Drew Eubanks than what we will later in the season, as you sort of transition to what this team probably is, which is, you know, perfectly fine team fighting for a back end of the playoff spot. But if somehow they are better than that, and who knows, maybe they will be, you kind of want to let, you know, veteran players play as much early on to give yourself an actual shot to win games.
So that's Max. That's the second round pick. That's number 42 overall. But what about the player that the Kings traded into the first round? to acquire. I thought he also had two really solid performances. And as far as we know, he'll go tonight. I can't remember who they play. I was going to say Phoenix. I can't remember. It's Phoenix. Yeah, they'll go tonight. Nick will go tonight versus Phoenix. But what do you think of how he's played so far for Sacramento?
Yeah, I think Nick Clifford has been really, really fun to watch. You know, he's had a couple of defensive issues here and there, which he's going to have to learn. He's had a couple of moments where, you know, maybe he isn't as smooth a ball handler as you would hope. But again, that's what this 10 weeks coming up is for. I think that there's plenty of room for improvement. It reminds me of Evan Turner. I've said that a couple of times. Mm. Even like a modern day Lionel Simmons. So basically Lionel Simmons with a three ball, maybe a little bit more athletic than Lionel, but Lionel had like a very, very high basketball IQ and a very universal game. He could pass the ball. He could rebound the ball extremely well. I think one of the biggest things is that you found a rebounder at an odd position. So whether he's playing the small forward or he's playing the shooting guard spot, this team has struggled, you know, outside of having Domas dominate the glass and having additional players, whether it's Devin Carter or it's Neek, you know, or, you know, again, Keegan Murray got much better as a rebounder this last season. You just need more. And I think that that's going to help the team. And overall, like, look, he kind of lets the game come to him. And that's a good thing. You know, he's not out there playing like a chicken with his head cut off. He's not, you know, turning. Well, he did have five turnovers last game, but, you know, the mistakes are honest rookie mistakes. They're not just like pushing everything way too hard and making, you know, forcing the action. So I like what we've seen so far. And he's also shown a little bit of that clutch gene that we know the players have. You know, he's scored a bunch of points in the fourth quarter in a couple of games. So I think the early returns are really good, and I do expect him to be in the rotation. Mm-hmm. I expect him to be, you know, maybe 14 to 18 minutes a night. But I do think that he'll find his way into the rotation sooner than Reyno, even if Reyno looks better, at certain points in summer league. You know, you can still see that he needs to get way stronger, with Neek. I don't think that that's the deal. I think he needs to work on his ball handling and secondary playmaking and stuff like that. But I like the idea of using him as a point forward for certain stretches of the game. And he just needs to make sure he can handle the ball pressure at the NBA level that they get to put on you. You know, you get picked up full court half the time, and he needs to figure out what that's going to look like and feel like.
You said you think Neek makes an immediate impact or immediate impact on the rotation. Where? Because that has become a topic of conversation over the last couple of days as well. Do you see him in that backup three position? Do you see him running somewhere on the point guard depth chart? Like, what would be the ideal spot for Neek to get minutes to start this season for Sacramento?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to have to be at the small forward spot. And, you know, for
which
right
I think
now,
is great. Like, I think,
you know,
that's
when
perfect.
You look at. Yeah, when you look at Zach LaVine and you look at, you look at Keon Ellis at the shooting guard spot, that position's taken care of. When you look at the point guard spot and you've got, you know, two point guards there and Dennis Schroeder and Malik Monk, if they make a change there, I could see the Kings using, you know, a combination of Keon Ellis, Devin Carter, and Neek Clifford as the third point guard. Mm-hmm. But that would be like a break in case of emergency. Somebody's out and you're going to have somebody out for three or four games. I also don't think that this roster is it. They don't want it to be complete. Whether or not it ends up being the final roster, that's yet to be seen. But, you know, they would still like to make a move or two here to balance out the roster a little bit more. And maybe that does open up an opportunity for Neek to play a little bit more in the backcourt. But for right now, it feels like he's probably a backup to Rosen. And again, look at the trickle down, you know, effect that this team is going to have, because when you have two point guards that are basically 26 to 30 minute per game guys, let's just say, you know, that's 56 minutes right there. one guy plays 30 and one guy plays 26 minutes between Schroeder and Monk, you're already over budget. So now you got to steal 8 minutes from the shooting guard position. And the shooting guard position, you have a 33 minute per game guy and a guy who should play 30 as well, and Keon. So now you're way over at that position. You're going to have to find a way to play small ball for large stretches. And, you know, maybe that means Nate Clifford even has to slide over and play a little bit of five, I mean, a little bit of four. But again, you need him to get bigger and stronger in order to do that. It's not a bad issue to have, but same time, like this roster is pretty full. It's got talent at multiple positions. And that's why, you know, again, Devin Carter playing point guard at summer league. If he could show that he's the third point guard on this team, then that would be a really good sign for him. If he can't prove that and they've got to go find a third point guard, then he's in trouble. Like he might not get off the bench at all, just because that's the dynamic of this team. You already have, he's a fifth guard. And if you have to bring in a sixth guard, because he can't handle the point guard duties or the third string point guard duties, that's a problem.
You mentioned that the Sacramento Kings, you know, they'd probably like to make a move. That probably wouldn't just be an acquisition. It would likely, they'd probably be more comfortable if they could get rid of a player or two at a certain position and kind of free things up. You mentioned the MLE and, you know, the ability that they have to sign guys. It'd probably be more advantageous for them to be able to move off a couple of the guys before they did anything like that.
Yeah, realistically, the only way for this thing to function properly is for the Kings to move one of their bigger contracts. So, you know, we've heard a lot about Malik Monk, and I think the reason why we hear about Malik Monk is I believe the team felt like that might be the easiest contract to move of that, like, $18 to $25 million range contract, and it just hasn't been able to, that hasn't proved out. So they've got to figure out a way to create some momentum with some other team if they're actually going to clear out space. Now, like, there's not a lot of players to clear out space for. You know, we heard someone on the internet, like some guys from The Athletic, talk about the potential, or they thought what would make sense would be a Malik Monk for Kyle Kuzma trade. But I got to be honest, that's just a major talent downgrade at this point. If you look at what Kuzma's done the last year and a half now, I don't think I would do that deal. If you're looking at a way to go get Kuminga, you know, again, you're going to have to clear up $20, $25 million in space. And if the Warriors aren't willing to take back that type of contract, then you have to find some other team to involve in the trade. And realistically, there are only two teams in the league that you can do that with, and that's Brooklyn and Detroit. Mm-hmm. The rest of the teams are pretty close to the salary cap or pretty close to luxury tax. And so it's not really easy to move off of all of these guys and to commit to a restricted free agent like they would with a guy like Kuminga. So it's super complicated. It is. It's just, it's not like if they're going to go out and chase Kuminga, number one, Kuminga's price has to come down. Number two, the Warriors' price, you might have to give a little bit more to the Warriors. Number three, you got to find a third team to take on a player like Monk. And number four, you got to be comfortable with what you're giving up and with the expense that Kuminga would be as far as salary. So that would be one of the most complicated transactions that I've seen, just because there aren't teams with cap space that can help you. And so whatever naturally happens here, it's not going to be simple. And the Kings can't just sign him to an offer sheet. They can, but the offer sheet's going to be $14.1 million, and that's not what he wants. And, you know, and even that deal would put you in the luxury tax. And that's something that, as of right now, I don't think the Kings are going to do. So it's really complicated if you're going to continuously try to make moves, unless you're swapping a player for a player like Monk for another $18 or $20 million player.
Do we have any idea what Kuminga's group is looking for?
Initially, the word was they were looking for $25 to $30 million a year, but you got to remember he's a base year compensation player. So when you trade for him, he counts as whatever you sign him for, that much money going out, but the Warriors can only take back, like, I think it's it's like 15 million or something. Like, it's very complex because of the base year compensation thing. And like, look, he could just go back and play. We hear, you know, the Warriors, he could just pick up his $7.9 million. It's not a player option. It's a qualifying offer. He could play for that this season. The Warriors could also try to sign him to like a smaller deal that they don't really want to do and he doesn't really want to take. Mm-hmm. So that could happen. But like the restricted free agent classes here is just a bummer for these guys. Yeah. And to be honest, it's probably a really good thing for Keon Ellis. He's not part of this because it's kind of sad. These guys don't have any money to move around. No teams do. And the teams that might have some money, they don't have any money under the luxury tax. So, you know, they're not going to go way above the luxury tax to sign a player. It's a bit of a struggle here.
Have you ever seen in your, you know, decade plus covering NBA basketball, a free agency period like this one?
I don't think so. Like, I think like this, in my 15 years, the thing that stands out about this one specifically is that there is just no money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's this idea that the salary cap raises 10% a year, and the next year it's only going up 7%, which is also freaking everybody out. That's not a good thing. But if it's only going to go up 10% a year and your standard raises for your own players is 8%, then like you're not gaining a whole bunch of cap room just naturally. And so that makes it really difficult. It makes it the whole entire process very difficult to, you know, see a window where you can create a bunch of money. And Kings had money, you know, a couple of years ago when they signed, they did the renegotiated an extension for Domantas Sabonis, and then they brought Harrison Barnes back. That's the one time that they had cap space. But even then we kept saying this might be the last time for 5 years, 6 years that they have cap space. And sure enough, that's why 2027 is looking so appealing. And it's also why the Kings aren't sitting there saying, hey, we'll give Kuminga $30 million. Let's get this deal done, because they're looking at that 2027 year and saying, hey, do we want to, if Kuminga is a right player, then sure. But if he's not, then what do? Then we have this contract and we're not going to be able to be players in a free agent class that maybe we want to be players in.
Yeah, you talk about the nuances of a potential Kuminga deal, and it really is fascinating on many levels, because you're talking about it from the perspective of what the Sacramento Kings could pay Jonathan Kuminga, but then there also comes part two, and it's what will Golden State allow that deal, like what sort of deal do you have to work out with Golden State in order to get him here to Sacramento? So you have to work with two different entities, both of which seem to hate each other in an effort to try to get him here to Sacramento.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we don't even know if Jonathan Kuminga wants to sign in Sacramento.
Well, right. Yeah. We know he doesn't want to sign in Golden State, but we don't know how he feels about Sacramento. That's true.
Yeah. He wants a better opportunity. And again, if the Kings are making a move to go get Kuminga and DeMar DeRozan is still on the roster, now you just go from having a glut at the point guard position to having a real problem at the point guard position and having a glut at the forward position, where again, Neat Clifford wouldn't get to play at all in his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Like you basically would wipe out any chance of him playing, and Keegan Murray would probably be pushed to like the 12th man on the 12th option in the lineup, in the rotation. So yeah, it's really, really complicated. And that's why I think, like, there is a pathway here, especially since Golden State doesn't really want him back. And that's like everything we've heard around this team, is that they're not enamored with bringing him back. The idea of bringing him back and potentially trading him, okay, maybe that works, but it's also possible it doesn't. And you know, his value gets hurt during that time, or he gets injured during that time. And next thing you know, you're in an even worse situation. So it's, again, we'll have to see how it all plays out in the end.
We'll come back. We'll talk more Kings basketball with James Hamm specifically. He brought him up earlier. We'll talk Devin Carter, what he's looked like here so far in Summer League, and what we expect from him headed into what's starting to feel like a pretty unpredictable Sacramento Kings season. That's ahead with our insiders from the insiders. It's our man James Hamm, D'Lo and KC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. All right, talking Kings basketball with our man James Hamm here. We got Game 3 of Summer League tonight. I think it's on ESPNU. You can find that somewhere. The Sacramento Kings will take on the Phoenix Suns. You gotta dig deep into the YouTube guide for that one. Probably not saved to your favorites, but it'll be there for you. Two dramatically different performances, Hammer, from Devin Carter so far this year. I know me and your co-host on the Insiders, Kyle Mattson, saw Devin Carter's performance on Saturday very differently. That's what I wanted to see from him. I wanted to see him score. I wanted to see him be comfortable. I wanted to see him rebound. I wanted him to look like he was the best player on the floor, and I thought he accomplished that. What do you think of Devin Carter and the way he's played for these first two games, and do you think that was even necessary?
Like, first of all, like, Devin Carter, I feel bad for him because he didn't get a natural anything in his rookie season. You know, he went through shoulder surgery, missed the entire summer, everything. So, like, look, at some point, we have to give him a little bit of a break about, you know, sort of his development and where he's at currently. The problem is that in order for him to break into the Kings rotation or to, like, be a force for the Kings or whatever it is that you want, it can't just be 30 points or bust. Like, he has to find a way to, number one, hit the glass. He's got to find a way to set up his teammates. And I think the idea here is that, you know, maybe you can make him into a point guard during summer league. And that's not really, like, realistic. Mm. That's not feasible to, like, expect a guy to go out there for three or four or five summer league games and all of a sudden he knows how to play the point guard position. But on the other side, you've got Devin, you know, making sure people know that he was a point guard before his final year or two at Providence, that, you know, he played point guard in some point guard in high school and he played point guard in his first couple of years. So, like, there's just something about watching him play and he doesn't look to set up anyone but himself. And that's where I think Kyle and I both kind of watched and said, okay, like, you scored 30 in a summer league game, like, whoop-de-doo. Like, show me that you can learn, that you can be part of a team that's growing, that you can do the job that you're being asked. And that is to set up your teammates and create for others. And so far we haven't seen that. And, you know, again, it's tough because you want him to have success to build in summer league so he has confidence moving forward. You also, you know, I think there is a possibility that Devin's been humbled a little bit by not just, you know, his rookie season, but by the constant mentions of him getting traded at any moment. Mm. Like, I think there is plenty of humbling that could happen here. But what I need to see is for him on the court to be a team player. And we're not seeing that yet, because what the Kings don't need is, like, a Cam Thomas. And that's what it looks like Devin Carter kind of feels like he's trying to do. It's like, hey, man, they already have a Malik Monk. And to be honest with you, Malik Monk's a better player. Malik Monk sets up his teammates. He averages 5.5 assists a game. You know, he can break a defense down. He can do things that you're not doing, mm-hmm. That makes him a, you know, a guy who's on the bubble, whether he's a starting level point guard or a great six man, but a great six man. And, you know, Devin Carter's got a long ways to go before he matches that type of like production. And you hope that he can get there. But I also, I feel for him because, you know, he's being asked to do something different. And he's being asked to maybe prove that he can be something different. And that's just really hard to do in, like, a 3 to 5 game sample size.
Hmm. It worked for me. And I don't need to see that again tonight. I wanted to see that in a game. I wanted to see him look like he was the best player on the floor. The thing that I liked the most, Hammer, was, you know, you talked about can you lead, can you facilitate, can you do all of those things, can you do the things that your team is asking you to do? He looked so uncomfortable in that first game leading the break. He looked uncomfortable with the ball in his hands. He looked uncomfortable kind of being that floor general, so to speak. He looks significantly more comfortable over the weekend. And sometimes guys just have bad games. They have bad outings. Obviously, he didn't get significantly better from game one to game two in the middle of in a summer league. He just executed better. He was more comfortable. And that's what I wanted to see, especially from the point guard thing, which I just don't like the idea. I wanted to see him comfortable with the ball in his hands. I wanted to see him comfortable getting up and down the floor. And I thought he did that. If he hits 10 to 13 along the way, shoot, I'm with it.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that. But what I need to see from him is, like, not the bad outing and not the great outing. What I need to see is in summer league a 17 to 22 point game with 8 rebounds and 6 assists or 5 assists.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5 rebounds and 5 or 6 assists. Like, show us that you can actually take on the role that they're asking. And I think it's interesting because, like we talked about with Reynolds, when Reynolds made that pass to Isaac Jones, where he just like flung the ball to Isaac Jones, hit him in stride with a one hand, like sort of wraparound pass, it was like, holy smokes, like there's something else there. And, you know, when you see like the basic stuff of Reynolds, yeah, he hit the three. Yeah, he's got the little baby jump hook. Oh, the other things that stand out about him is he's been so vocal on defense that you hear him through the television. Everyone there in Vegas is talking about it, how he's directing traffic. He's yelling at everybody. He's having quiet conversations with guys. He's showing a leadership quality, all of those things. Like, I just said all that about him. And, you know, all I can say is I watched Devin Carter do a crazy step back three that would never fly in the NBA. And, you know, sure, he put up 30 points and he was highly efficient. And he did hit the glass, but you're always left with that, okay, man, show me something that makes you unique and that maybe either shows me something that you couldn't do before or a process that you're learning. And I think that's where I think Kyle and I keep wanting more. It's like, hey, I don't want him to go score 40 points and not 30 points. I want him to score less and be more part of what's happening on the court. Because you and I both know there's never going to be a moment, or maybe if there is, it's like once or twice, where Devin Carter is asked to go out there and score 30 in a game.
Yeah,
that's not who he's going to be. So show me who you can be within the team concept. And so, again, maybe we're being too hard on him, but I also think Kings fans have been way too hard on Devin Carter with this whole idea that he's going to show up in Vegas. He's going to put on a show, and then they're going to be able to trade him for Kuminga because he put up more points. And that's something that, you know, you see all the time on social media, like everyone's pulling for Devin Carter to blow up so the Kings can trade him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you should be pulling for Devin Carter to improve as a basketball player. And improving as a basketball player sometimes can mean making more of your shots, but it can also mean just being more part and more, I want to say present in mm-hmm. the game.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not just about you getting 30 points. It's about you being the reason or part of the reason why a team won.
I'm not the biggest Devin Carter fan, but I'll stall him out a little bit. He scored 30, but he did it on 13 shots. So it's not like he was, you know, jacking him up, trying to up his point total. He was pretty efficient with the shots that he took. Again, 13 of them. I think he took 7 threes. I believe it was 5 of 7. Might have been the same thing from the foul line. Overall, I got what I wanted from him, and he could have hit half of those shots. And did all of the other things he did made me feel good about his game. And again, he's just a player. I just don't think I get it, James. I just don't think I get him the player, particularly him the player and his fit on this team. I just don't get it, but I'm willing to see it out, and I'm willing to hope for the best. I just don't see it.
You know what, man? He reminds me so much of Jonathan Kuminga on the Warriors.
Hmm.
He just doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. He just, like, how do you get through to somebody? And I made this argument for Kuminga like a week and a half ago, right before I left on vacation. Like, I'm starting to turn a little bit on him as a potential trade target, because we see we see him with the Warriors and we get that he doesn't fit there. It's like a round, like a square peg in a round hole, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to be Aaron Gordon. He wants to be a superstar. And I also watch him and I think I see the potential to be a star. And so maybe in a different scenario, in a different world where he's not on the Golden State Warriors, maybe he does get that opportunity and he does live up to who he believes he is. And I think that's always going to be the problem in Golden State. Like you hear it all the time. If, you know, an unnamed source told me one time, if Kuminga ever is as good as he thinks he is, he'll be a superstar. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to be as good as he thinks he is. And so that's the problem. And he's not going to be as good as he thinks he is in Golden State. That's just the facts. And if he signs there short term so he can get traded a couple of months from now or whatever, like what good is that going to do him?
It doesn't feel like that. It feels like that's the worst scenario.
It helps the Warriors because mm-hmm. now they still have an asset in case somebody big becomes available. But that's not going to help him. If I'm him, I'm like, yeah, I'd rather leave. Yeah, I'd rather go somewhere, even if it's for a budget contract. You know, if he were to sign like a 2-year, you know, I don't know, you could, I guess the Kings could use a mid-level exception on him and try to clear out cap space. But like, you'd have to tell the Warriors, you know, what do we have to do before we sign him to this deal to trade for him? And, you know, it would be less from the Warriors. But again, it's tough to match what he wants and who he thinks he's going to be. And it comes back to Carter in the same way. Carter has a very, very high opinion of who he is as a player and who he thinks he is in the league. And he also is going to have to go through a process where he realizes that might not be who he actually is. Mm-hmm. And it might take a while for that to happen. But you know, it's tough. It's not an easy business.
The Kuminga thing is starting to remind me of the Juwan Jennings conversation we had earlier in this show, Hammer. And I actually, in the middle of talking to Jesse and the Chatty House and myself, I talked myself into, I understand why Juwan Jennings is doing what he's doing. He has no leverage. And that's the tough part. But he's operating on the idea of, when Deebo Samuel entered the season as your number one wide receiver, you paid him as your number one wide receiver. Last year, when Brandon Ayuk entered the season as your number one wide receiver, you paid him like your number one wide receiver. Brandon Ayuk is not going to be available. I am entering the season on the final year of my contract as your number one wide receiver to a quarterback you just paid 200 some odd million dollars to. You need to pay me like your number one wide receiver. That's living off a hope and a prayer, but I understand why Juwan is doing it. I understand why Jonathan Kuminga is doing what he's doing. I just, in this current state of the market, and this is where I feel like Kuminga's team might really not understand what's happening. There is not a market for a player commanding the type of salary that you mentioned earlier. A 25 to $30 million risk, you're betting on potential with this young man. And it's why when Kings fans ask repeatedly or in the Chatty House or on Twitter or whatever it was about Jonathan Kuminga and the Kings throughout the season, my answer was always, I devoted 0 minutes to Jonathan Kuminga because I just didn't, there's no pathway to it. There's just no way that it makes sense. And even from a Warriors standpoint, the only thing that I think that the Warriors would see of great value is Jonas Valanciunas. Well, Valanciunas was long gone, and I was like, there's no... That's why when this Kuminga stuff started, I was pretty surprised because I just couldn't see it. And that all took place after the Nick Clifford, the Nick drafting. And so it just became, all right, I guess somehow this has become a conversation, but I never saw it. And I don't see a happy ending for Jonathan Kuminga in Sacramento, in Golden State, or virtually anywhere. Wherever he winds up, he's not going to be happy with it.
No, you're probably right. He's going to get there and already be, you know, the whole Buddy Hield thing. Buddy Hield signed that they claimed it was $110 million deal, mm-hmm. but the nuts and bolts were, I think, $86 million. He was angry about that contract the moment he signed it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like he joked around about it, but it was a joking around in a very negative way. Like we all could tell he was pissed. So you're right. There is going to be like this moment where he's not going to get what he's asking, where his agent's not going to get what he's asking. And part of it where his agent has promised more than what he can actually get for him. But it's the dynamic of the league right now. And if you're the Kings, yeah, like taking a gamble on a, you know, again, you're probably talking, I'm going to guess at a minimum, a 4-year, $80 to $190 million contract. That's at a minimum. But you're willing to do it on a 22-year-old player who's averaged 16 points per game in the league,
yeah,
and who's shown flashes of brilliance. You're willing to do it, but again, you're going to have to rewrite your roster again if you were to do that.
Right.
Like if you go out and trade for, we talked about this the other day, if you go out and trade for Kuminga and you still have DeMar DeRozan on your roster, you still have Keegan Murray on your roster, who's your starters? And right. And everyone gets real quiet real quick. And then again, that just means that Nick Clifford just lost a year of his career. He's not going to get an opportunity at all. And that's not what the Kings want either. So I think it's complicated, and it's going to be complicated until it's done. And is there a possibility he just signs with the Warriors and plays for pennies? Sure. But I'd rather do that than sign like a 4-year deal starting at $14 million a year with a mid-level exception with a team like the Kings and then regretting the contract that I signed the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does always come down to that. You think you have a $5 million house, but the only offers you get are $2 million. I hate to tell you, you got a $2 million house. It's kind of where Kuminga is at right now. And there, again, maybe there's more money next summer, but I'm going to guess there's not, especially with the NBA reducing the projections for next summer.
Yeah, the projections were reduced. And then there was that we were reading about the, was it like $500 million the players had to give back from the escrow account? Like it broke it down. It's like some percentage of the salary. And like Steph Curry lost $5 million off of his contract because of that. They over projected what they thought their earnings would be. And it's like, oh my God, what is going on in the NBA right now? Because this isn't about television rights. That's not what this is about. That money's done and paid for. This is about basketball revenue. This is about non-basketball revenue. This is about the jersey sales and all of that other stuff. That's like, oh, you don't read about that happening too often.
And every, you never hear it happening.
And every projection on the first, you know, the $80 million player, $90 million, first $100 million per year player is all based off the 10% increases every year. And out the gate, they're like, no, it's 7%. And now everyone's projections are thrown off and they're back to like, well, we don't really know who the first player is going to be to hit that number or when.
Yeah, no, this changed a lot of things. And I know it's 3% difference, but that 3% is so much money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, like 3% of 100, what should have been 170 million. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, I don't know, 500 million, 5 million that just got wiped out. That's a biannual exceptions is half, a third of a mid-level exception. It's two league minimum players. That's a lot of money.
Unrelated to the Kings, Hammer, but the Philadelphia 76ers are in mid-season form here on July 14th as Paul George underwent a successful arthroscopic procedure on his left knee Monday, today, to treat an injury suffered during a recent workout. George will begin a rehab program and be reevaluated prior to the start of training camp. Dear God, what a disaster of a contract that turned out to be for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, yeah, I mean, Paul George is a gift that keeps on giving in the NBA.
Goodness,
I mean,
gracious.
That's how Oklahoma built their dynasty that's just starting.
Yeah.
I mean, they got Shea and like 5 first-round picks for him. And then the Clippers lost him. And, you know, the Clippers walked away from him because of stuff like this. They knew where his body was at. But mm-hmm. to pair him and Embiid. And Embiid, you know, he missed the first two seasons of his career. Like, he didn't play at all.
He played 30. Funny enough, we looked this up earlier. Missed the first two seasons of his career and only played 31 games in his third season.
Yeah. I mean, he's missed so many games. I mean, that's why, you know, the best ability sometimes is availability. And to be honest, like, that franchise is built around a house of cards. That's again, you want to build a franchise on sand. It's the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah. So Paul George will be reevaluated prior to the start of camp, and Joel Embiid, who knows, man? Who knows whether he is fully functional at this point? I know Daryl Morey spoke recently and said he expects Joel Embiid to be available for the start of training camp. Great. The fact that you don't know definitively whether your $63 million player will be available for the start of training camp is a hell of a statement, even from Daryl Morey. James, great to have you back, my friend. We definitely missed you last week. We've got the Home Run Derby coming up. We're your home of Major League Baseball All-Star Game coverage all week long, and it begins with the Home Run Derby starting here in just minutes on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.